Hello and welcome to Dungeon Arcade. We are an actual play sort of storytelling podcast. We're really falling away from the storytelling more and more as this goes on. But we are playing Stars Without Number. Singular. Stars Without Number. I've been saying it wrong for like four episodes now. I'm saying it right now. Stars Without Number is a role-playing system devised by Kevin Crawford. We are rotating through a bunch of different systems to try and showcase really what the world has to offer of role-playing games. D&D by Wizards of the Coast is fantastic. We love playing D&D. Our first campaign was D&D. But there's a lot of other kind of crazy novel things out there, and we really want to take an opportunity to show them off. So, Stars Without Number, you can get it on DriveThruRPG. There's a free version, and then there is a paid version. The paid version is crazy intense and awesome, but the free version, you get a bunch, like almost too much stuff, honestly. You should really like pare this down a little bit as a free version, if I'm being honest. Kevin, hit me up. We said last week we weren't really sure what we were going to be doing next. I teased that we might do one more episode of Stars Without Number, and then I started looking into what that episode might be, and that episode has turned into probably four or five episodes depending on how quickly we get through things, but I think it'll be a lot of fun. We're going to be playing through Grandfather's Reign, which is an adventure created by Kevin Crawford. It's the same person who created Stars Without Number. He created a system called Dust, which is part of the old school role playing game systems. It's a version of Stars Without Numbers. I think it's basically Stars Without Numbers, except really more close to like the destruction of human civilization. But it's also backwards compatible with Stars Without Numbers. So we're playing it that way. We're playing Grandfather's Reign with the Stars Without Number handbook. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be basically doing the main mission. These guys have no idea what we're doing. Beyond a couple things. And the last thing I'll say before I introduce our players, we are all, well, I'm not, I'm your galaxy master this time. So, but everyone else is playing a psionic character, which is one of the, I guess, races. How is it categorized in the book? Now that I'm saying that out loud, that doesn't feel right.
It's like a class, right?
What'd you say?
It's like a class, right?
Yeah, class. That's probably a better, yeah, psychic characters in training. Yeah. So it's like a class, which basically is, psychic abilities of some kind. They give you kind of a backstory about them, and there's a bunch of different kinds of them. I think there's six. So we're playing a few different ones, and I'll let them introduce what systems they're playing. We introduced telepathy a little bit over the last campaign with Nate's character.
I think it was teleportation.
That's what I meant. Teleportation. I just got to teleport, and I was like, that's it.
That's basically all of them.
We play a little bit with teleportation, so we're not doing that one this time, but all three characters are psionic characters, and then we'll probably definitely move on from Stars Without Number for now. So without further ado, after the longest introduction of all time, we are playing with, we're not in the same room because quarantine, COVID, all that jazz. So without further ado, Michael, our former galaxy master, would you like to introduce your character and what psionic you chose?
I am Michael, and I'm playing Rico. He is a precog, which is mostly...
Are you kidding me that your name is Rico?
Nope.
I named my character Nico.
Okay.
Great, we have another Ash and Dash.
No, we're changing the character. Alex, unfortunately, you have to change your character. I'm sorry. I introduced Michael first. It's how it is.
Incredible. I literally came up with this name like an hour ago. So
that's unbelievable.
Oh, that's amazing. But I am playing a precog who is, it's all about seeing into the future, avoiding some bad events that could be happening in the immediate future, to seeing things that could be happening a year from now. There's also some abilities about just changing probability, so that way some things that would be random be like kind of you making it land on a specific outcome. So
yeah, nice. And what is your character? We're doing a different sort of history background for everybody, so we don't have a robust history of people, but Do you have a race and general description of your character?
Don't have a race name.
Okay.
But I do know that he is a humanoid that has greenish skin and red eyes.
Spooky. Tall, short.
Average.
Beefy, lean.
On the lean side.
Okay. So average height, lean, Rico, green, or humanoid, green skin, red eyes. And what is your alignment?
He is true neutral.
True neutral. All right. Perfect. Well, that is Rico being played by Michael. Alex, do you need a little bit more time to come up with a new character name?
I just blasted one out.
All right. Perfect. We're going to move over to Alex then. So Alex, please introduce your character, not named Miko, and tell us a little bit about him and your psionic.
For sure. I will be playing Von Lizardo. It was going to be Nico Lizardo, but
I think Von Lizardo was better.
I like Von.
That's pretty awesome.
Von Lizardo. I hadn't given any thought to race until this very moment. And I didn't want to be a human again since I just did a human. I'm thinking, Grand Admiral Thrawn from Star Wars?
Yeah.
He's a Chiss.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm thinking like something like this, right? So not necessarily the blue skin, but the fact that, like, the humanoid type of character who is just kind of like taller and more commanding than a human, but otherwise like accepted as not like weird looking. You know what I'm saying? So yeah. Maybe we just
human,
but blue.
Is he blue? Yeah.
I mean, we can just go full Chiss, right? So like pale blue skin, dark hair. Also the red eyes.
Okay. And I mean, and then I'm assuming you're mimicking after Thrawn. So I mean, pretty barrel chested.
Yeah.
He was a military man sort of thing. He's not, you know, he's not a bodybuilder by any means, but dude's kind of jacked. So sort of Captain America.
Yeah. I think that Vaughn maybe is less so. I'd say that he's, actually, yeah, I'd say he's maybe like more on the slim side.
Okay.
But tall.
Okay.
Yeah. Tall and slim. We'll go there.
Okay. And, your psionics and then your alignment.
Yep. So Vaughn's primary psionic is telepathy, which is as it sounds, I get to read and influence thought, get in people's head spaces, all up where I'm not welcome, so on and so forth. But he also has a couple points in biopsionics, which is primarily healing, and then a very small amount in metapsionics, which is very meta, as you would expect. It's psychic powers about psychic powers.
Yeah, it's metapsionics are weird. I that's the one I would have chosen if I had been playing. It's just weird. I don't know that it would have been too useful depending on the campaign, could be crazy useful, but like
that was the main reason I didn't pick it.
Yeah, that's fair. And future reference for you guys, if you were to choose something like that, I would make sure that it is useful because we're trying to show off systems. Yeah. But anyway, no one did, so no one will know. Anyway, and then alignment.
Vaughn is lawful evil.
Hmm.
Vaughn's whole deal. Should I get into this?
I mean, give me a little bit about his temperament. If you kind of have an idea of what that's.
Yeah.
So like, because this is the other thing is like these terms like true neutral, lawful evil. Like I'm curious.
Right, they're very flexible.
I'm curious how you're interpreting it. I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like Vaughn's whole deal is that he's like truly like, I don't want to say an evil mastermind, but his whole thing is to amass power and influence through gaining following and gaining power. And he's willing to do, things to gain those that are maybe unsavory, but it's all very systematic, right? So he's lawful in the sense that not that he doesn't break laws, but that he is very like, he's calculated, he's systematized, he uses the corrupt systems in place to gain the power. He doesn't go like burn buildings down, right?
He's not an anarchist. He is.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wants there to be Arky, and he just wants to be in charge of it.
Yeah. Hmm. Okay, cool.
I put a lot of points into hench keeping. I thought that would be a fun thing.
That is pretty cool, actually. That'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah.
Okay. Nate, introduce your character that is not a rhyme or synonym of Rico or Vaughn.
All right. That shouldn't be too hard. I am playing as Tarkus Yarim. Yeah, not Rico or Vaughn.
Tarkus Yarin. Okay. Give me a little physical description of him.
Yarin.
he is, well, that voice won't really fit him here in a second. He is of the species. He is a morph, M-O-R-T-H. They are big humanoid, but more like a gorilla humanoid shape, not like a actual humanoid, but just more bipedal with two arms. But yeah, more of like a gorilla shape. The main differences between him and an actual gorilla, though, is that these species have two large tusks that come up from like the bottom of their mouth, like their bottom lip, and they also have a very large tail.
Hmm. Interesting. How large is a large tail?
I didn't quite prep that. I don't know, probably like...
Give us the exact length of your tail, Nathan.
In centimeters, preferably.
Oh, shoot. Okay, hang on.
I mean, is it like the length of his body, or is it less than that?
Probably like 2 feet long.
Okay.
And then he's probably close to like 6'4". They're big boys.
Okay. So I'm going to assume that like Vaughn is like 6'3". And then Tarkus is like 6'4", and then Rico is sitting like steady at like 5'10", 5'11".
The tail is 60.96 centimeters.
Okay, thank you.
Those of you out there who need
really
that.
Important for the encounter building.
What is your psionic?
I went with telekinesis for my psionic, which is telekinesis is kind of the, I don't want to say the force because that just sounds weird, but I mean, it really is like manipulating things through the use of force, or like moving things with your mind in a way. So, I mean, it is kind of similar to the force, but then it also takes on other things of manipulating energy and stuff to the point where it's like, I could create a telekinetic gun to attack with rather than having a physical weapon.
Whoa.
As long as I have the effort to commit to that. Or
cast Mage Hand?
I mean, kind of. The psychic can exert force as if with one hand and their own strength. Currently at my level, it's the psychic can manipulate up to 800 kilograms and can affect as many individual objects at once as they have telekinesis skill levels. So I could lift up to 800 kilograms worth of three items at the same time right now. Or affect those. But like, yeah, I mean, moving things with force, lifting things besides yourself, because that's a skill later on, I guess that's how they balanced it. And like, I could like change friction under something to make it harder to move. It's just kind of altering pre-existing like objects for the most part.
Okay. You manipulate the matter around you.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
And kind of all its forms. And then give us your alignment.
My alignment is neutral good.
Okay. Neutral good. Perfect. Okay. One last thing I'm going to talk about with the psionics before we jump into kind of background building stuff. I'm hoping we get to actually play it this week, but I don't know how long the background building stuff will take. So sorry.
This sort of thing's fun, though.
It could be sort of an episode zero, or we'll cut it entirely because, you know, it's boring. So the last thing I'm going to point out, one of the cool things about psionics is they are the way that they use their powers is through something called effort, which is a separate skill. I'm going to say skill on the player sheets that people fill out if they actually fill one out, or, you know, piece of paper, something like that. It's not actually listed in the skills list. It's its own thing, which is determined based off of your I totally lost it right here. What is it? It's wisdom, constitution, and then your, when you level up, you can add, you get the opportunity to add more to it. And basically the closest like D&D equivalent, because that's the most prevalent, is it's sort of like spell slots. You have up to, you know, let's say 5 effort in this case, because we're just talking, I think Nate has 5 effort or something like that. You have up to 5 effort, and you can do basically something with those 5 efforts per scene, per fight. Or if you want to do something that's kind of beefier, bulkier than what you can technically do, you can expend more effort to do it. The other thing you can do is you can torch. Torching is basically intentionally ignoring safety protocols and neural refractory periods to channel MES energy. So if you are down, let's say, 4 effort and you want to do something that takes 2, you could decide, you know what, I'm going to torch. And what happens is it's an instant action. You can perform it once per round. It provides a free point of effort that lasts the rest of that scene. And even if it puts you like over the maximum, I guess, if you wanted. And what happens is after you do it, every time you torch, you have to roll a D6 and then something happens to you. If it's a 1 to 2, you lose a point in your wisdom score. If it's a 3 to 4, you lose a point in your constitution score. If it's a 5, you lose 1 point from an attribute you choose. And if it's 6, no harm is done by torching. So it's a really interesting way of being able to push yourself beyond the limits of what you can actually do at a potential cost. So, and I think that's a really cool mechanic that gets added in. I think it would have been really easy to be like, yeah, this is what you can do. But we all know there are those heroic moments in television and books and movies where the character does something that they ordinarily wouldn't do because couldn't do because it's like a life and death situation. And Stars Without Number gave us an actual mechanic to implement something like that. So I think it's really cool. I'm really happy it's in there. I don't know that any of you will ever use it, but it's there. So let's jump in. I am going to try to call you guys by your character names from here on out. If you have a character voice or you want to practice character voices, you can do that. If you don't want to, that's fine too. Basically, what's going to happen is I have like 11 questions. That should go, some of them should be quicker, some of them should be a little bit longer, that are basically about you guys as a group. Which means that I'm going to ask you a question about specifically another member of your group, a relationship you have with the group or another member of the group, or something about the three of you and your background together. Because we're jumping into this at level 6, I don't know if I said that up top, but everyone's at level 6. I wanted to kind of provide a reason for why these three people are together without like, you know, oh, hey, like this dude hired all 3 people. Not that that's a bad way to start a mission. Totally fine. But for our sake, I thought this could be fun. So, Rico, I am interested in what the three of you do for money. Are you effectively mercenaries who work together? Are you bounty hunters? Are you thieves? Are you nomads that find work however they can get it? Do you have steady employment with a person or an organization or something else entirely that I didn't think about? Because, you know, even though I may seem it, I'm not all knowing.
I get to decide this?
You get to decide this.
Oh, wow. It's a lot of pressure all of a sudden.
Sorry.
Don't blow it.
I will say that we are 3 mercenaries of, you know, different skills and whatnot, and we don't necessarily work together all the time. But we are kind of known for working together. So a lot of times when people hire us, they will specifically hire the 3 of us.
Okay. And do you guys, is there like an organization that you guys find your bounties through? Or is it more freelance work?
There is an organization, but there's also the freelance side that people can contact us through that.
Okay. So the organization is more of like a guild kind of thing where you can request the guild or you can go to mercenaries themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. I can work with that. Guild. Freelance. Cool. Vaughn, how long have you all been working as a group? this question is basically geared towards establishing how long you've known each other. We already established that you guys work as a group, sometimes, not always, but have you known each other since birth? Do you guys have like same adopted parents, or did the guild that you guys work for adopt you? Was it just on a mission one day and it just kind of stuck?
I think it's interesting, maybe if we've like known each other forever. And I think like thinking about our characters, that maybe makes the most sense. Yeah, maybe we, for whatever reason, like grew up in the same town. Maybe, you know, because of our psionic powers, we were all in similar like systems, you know. And as a result, we were as like a utilitarian choice to continue working together. And yeah, even though that our paths are probably in going in different directions, that because we have known each other forever, it like is why we continue to work together.
Yeah. Okay. And you know, like Michael established, you guys don't always work all of your jobs together.
Sure.
But you know, it's kind of, it's almost like that live work balance. Sometimes you guys find a project that y'all want to do together, and sometimes, you know, better just do it on your own. Tarkus, what was the first mission you all went on together? What type of mission was it? What happened? Was it even a success? And I don't necessarily mean, I'm also going to clarify, like when I say first mission, this could be you guys were kids and you decided to do this thing together that required like some kind of planning and that was it, or it was an actual mercenary mission, however you want to answer that question.
This will be fun. Since we've known each other pretty much forever and kind of grew up together, I kind of think that it was like we were all teenagers and like super bored or like looking to do something one night and decided we were going to sneak in to this gas station after it was closed one night just to do something like different and like kind of, oh, we're going to be rebellious or whatever. We're going to do whatever. So I think we try to like not break into like steal stuff, just kind of be like, yeah, we snuck into this place after it was closed or whatever, just for the heck of it. I don't think it was a great success, honestly. I think we like planned out how we were going to do it, but didn't really know enough about the building, or like didn't really do enough reconnaissance work. We're like, okay, we'll pick the lock, and if we can't pick the lock, we'll like sneak in through a vent or something, or we'll do something like that. And when we got there, we weren't able to pick the locks, and the air vents were already like they were fully connected just to like an air conditioning unit, so you couldn't really like climb in through those. So I think we just set out to do this thing and like kind of be a little bit rebellious or whatever and just have some teenage fun one night, and we never really got in, but it was still a good time to like plan it out and try it all or whatever, but we never actually got inside of this gas station.
Yeah, cool. I like that little teenage rebellion. No real harm done. I like that. Rico, what was the biggest fight you had with another member of the group, and how was it resolved, or was it resolved?
I think the biggest argument I have had with a member of this team was with Tarkus, because me and Vaughn were really into the idea of screwing over the client in exchange for money, which also would have put several innocent lives in danger and whatnot. But, you know, me and Vaughn didn't really care, but Tarkus always kind of had a little bit of a soft spot for people who would be just caught in the blast radius. So yeah, I think we never really like formally resolved it. I think we both have just decided to ignore that it ever happened.
Yeah. So I guess I'm assuming what did happen? Did you guys decide to screw over the innocent people? Did you guys get the money and hurt the innocent people, or did Tarkus, effectively? Yeah. Okay. Yeah, you actually did it. Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. That's a cool thing. I like that. But yeah, so I mean, for Tarkus's sake, that has to be kind of, an interesting, like, you've moved on, but at what cost? Especially without really like sitting down and hashing it out. Okay. Hold on, I gotta make a note. Perfect. Vaughn.
Yes.
What is Rico most afraid of?
Rico's most afraid of one of the members of his crew having a name that sounds really close to his, so that we get confused all the time. Rico is most afraid of losing losing his ability to like have control of situations and his life.
I like that. I like that a lot. Could you, next person, Tarkus, what is Vaughn most afraid of?
I think probably this is going to sound kind of cliched, but going with him, I think that he's kind of afraid of failure in a way, in the sense that he's trying to, like, I mean, with even screwing over those innocent people in the job and everything, like trying to do what it takes, but not, I don't know. It's along his whole taking points in henchmen, you know what I'm talking about.
Hench management, right. Basically.
That, like, to the point where, because he's slowly trying to build up and, like, gain power and stuff, I think the biggest fear that he could possibly have, or that he does have, is of failure, or of, if this doesn't work out, what do I have left, kind of thing. Like, he's put his cards, he's kind of gone all in on this plan of amassing power through using the system, but if he's unable to use that system, I think he's afraid of what he'd find out he doesn't have at that point.
Yeah, sort of he's afraid of not being remembered in a way.
Yeah.
Like, he's afraid of basically just like of dying and having accomplished nothing in a sort of sense. And he feels like by amassing followers and by doing this sort of thing, then like he can live on forever in the history books.
Yeah.
I like that. And Rico, what is Tarkus most afraid of? I planned these questions out beforehand, and now I feel like I should have mixed it up because Rico's biggest fight was with Tarkus, but hey.
Yeah.
We're here now.
I think Rico's biggest fear is
snakes.
Losing the values.
Why'd it have to be snakes?
Snakes.
Can I change the answer for Vaughn to snakes also?
We're all just terrified of snakes.
Everyone hates snakes.
I think his biggest fear is losing the values that he's got. So like his sense of morality.
Right, sort of a succumbing to the dark side,
like,
kind of.
Yeah, especially like terms. Being surrounded by mercenaries, like a lot of them do not have the same values as him. A lot of them are willing to do literally anything for the right amount of money, but that's not Tarkus.
Yeah, it's kind of a superhero-y kind of approach to it. Okay. We're back to Vaughn. where do the three of you feel most at home? This could be different places. It could all be the same place.
It'd be kind of fun if we like had a spot, like a community spot.
It could also, I'll also throw out the possibility, this doesn't need to be a like physical location. It could be like, I feel most at home. I mean, like, just to throw something out, not to influence your decision, but Vaughn could feel most at home in front of a crowd that he's, you know, bringing to a side sort of thing. Like, it could be more ethereal in that sort of way. But it could also be like, you know, this sort of, I mean, if there's like a home base, then, you know, it's like, relax. Like, you don't have to have these facades of, you know, who you present to the world anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of thing. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not, I just to make sure you're not limited to what, to one interpretation of what that question might be.
Right. There's this new, this place that's gotten really popular, like, across the galaxy, but the original one was in their hometown, and it's a place where you go to take, you get like mono blades and throw them at big targets on the wall. And like, it's a bar too.
Yeah, because throwing mono blades and drinking, they go hand in hand.
Yeah. And like, this is like a trendy thing that's, there's a lot of places now, but the original one is in their hometown where they grew up together. And so they would go there and hang out through their adolescence. And when they go home, that's kind of the spot too. And I think it's, you know, it like reminds them of their childhood and their home, but also like each of them has, even if they're not there together, like a niche thing there, right? Like, this is a great place for Vaughn to influence people and to like meet people to potentially, yeah, like add to his following, right? Like, and I'm sure that Rico and Tarkus have specific reasons. Maybe Tarkus, you know, loves to yuck it up with the locals there, and Rico really likes to show off his monoblade throwing skills.
Tarkus cheats.
I was actually going to say, I think Tarkus's favorite thing would be to, like, whilst the people aren't looking, slowly, like, telekinetically nudge someone's monoblade a little bit to the left or something.
Yeah, he cheats. Yeah, like,
just, like, even if he's not in the game, he's, like, just, like, at the bar, just, like, somebody who he just looks over is like, ah, they're not going to hit the target this time. Just, like...
Yeah,
just to mess with it, people, I think.
And it annoys Rico because he is actually good at it, and Tarkus cheats.
I like that a lot. Actually, that is awesome. Oh man, that's a great answer. I love that answer so much. Okay, Tarkus.
Yeah.
How is space being regulated? So I mean, generally speaking, there's, you know, a government system of some kind, you know, a unification of planets, or you know, a king, or whatever we want to call it. How is it being ruled or regulated or whatever? And how do the three of you feel about who is in charge? I think we have a pretty obvious answer for one of them, but
one of them is it's not him, so he doesn't like it. But
yeah, and that's Rico. So.
Yeah, that's me, actually. No. I don't think it's just a king. I don't think it's just one guy who gets to like be in control of all of space. That seems a bit impossible to manage. And two, I kind of want it to be like, or I feel like it would be more of a council of sorts. Maybe not like a full-on government where there's like... I mean, yeah, more of a council than anything, because it's impossible for one person to rule literally all of space for very many reasons. So yeah, I would say like a not a huge council, but definitely somewhat large. But yeah, not one person for sure.
Okay, and then we obviously know that Vaughn would at the very least like a seat at the table, or, you know, has a sort of a rallying cry around him that he's trying to get to be a part of this council to potentially overthrow the council. We don't know. How do Tarkus and Rico feel about it? Does it like just completely not concern them in their day to day? Do they have really strong opinions about whether it should or shouldn't exist?
about the council itself or about Vaughn's?
About the council. Thing? Yeah. Okay. Not commenting on what anyone else feels about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I know Tarkus at least would be fine with it. He hasn't seen them do anything worthy of not approving of, if that makes sense. Like, there hasn't been any sort of huge scandals or huge.
Yeah. Like, it generally does good. So.
Yeah. He's kind of, they generally do good. And what is bad isn't like horrendous, whatever, blatant abuse of power.
Yeah.
Rico, I don't think I would know how Rico feels about that, if we're being honest.
I mean, he cannot have an opinion of it. He could just be like, it happens. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, I kind of feel like that would be him then.
Okay. Oh, no comment. Okay. This is for all of you to answer for your own character. What would make you stop living the life you are currently living? In essence, is this existence what you wanted to be, or is this an ends to a means situation for something else down the road? I can put people on the spot if you want, or if you have an idea really quickly, you can chime in.
I think that I know for Vaughn, I think that it's he'll like never be satisfied, much like Alexander Hamilton. And so, man, you guys didn't laugh at that joke. I thought that was good.
I still haven't seen it, man.
There's a whole thing about how he'll never be satisfied.
I know. I've been meaning to watch it, but like it's been a hectic past couple weeks.
I was trying to remember what the line was where he's like, I'm just like my country. I'm young.
He's young, scrappy, hungry. And hungry.
Yeah, young, scrappy, and hungry.
Yeah, I've only watched the first half of this once. So anyway.
Sorry. I didn't laugh because I was trying to come up with another joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like I think that he's always going to be looking for like the next thing or looking for more. And that even if and when he does like, yeah, get like a powerful station or position or, you know, runs his own, you know, potentially semi-legal business or group or whatever, that he'll never be like, okay, this is good right here. So yeah, ultimately, his goal is to like amass again following and power and whatever. And I think that he's open to various avenues of that taking form. But when he does achieve some level of that, he's not gonna like sit still in it. So I guess the short answer is that it will always continue, even if it like looks differently.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of like being a mercenary is a really nice place to be right now because you kind of travel the galaxy. You meet lots of people. You can flex and show off like this is what I'm capable of and are sort of garnering this fame. So, yeah, it's not. Yeah, I think that's a good answer. I think it makes sense. So. Rico, Tarkus.
I think for Tarkus, it's definitely a means to an end because his whole Tarkus has always been pretty devoted to like learning more about his specific tree or like his specific tree of psionics. And I think like ultimately his dream in life or like whatever would more to be to educate others or to like help realize others' potential in the psionic field and stuff. But whether it be from them not being around any sort of like institution or anything to really do that, or whether it's there's not openings, or he's just always been a mercenary and has never really wanted to leave the group to do something like that. Whether it be for one of those reasons, he's ended up becoming a mercenary and living this kind of life. But this definitely isn't like his ideal situation, but it gets him by for now until he can get more into where he wants to be, I would say.
What do you hope to accomplish, I guess? Is it because I feel like when we talk about places of like education, especially when it comes to psionics, which is really tricky in the galaxy, because I mean there's a lot of like power that can wield if you can influence things without actually touching them, or, you know, even going into someone else's mind and influencing them. So most of the academic places for this are probably pretty, like, they're extremely peaceful by nature. And also really, like, when someone is like really like open to being regulated, like, you know, yeah, no, totally fine. Like, we don't, it's sort of a, we can shut this part of ourselves down because it makes you uncomfortable sort of thing, because we're really interested in that academic education component of it and not so much in what it can bring people who are psionic. So I guess where do you fall in the spectrum? Like, as a mercenary, I imagine that you're a little bit more okay with the, like, hey, this is power.
Yeah, that's part of his thing also. So he wants to help others learn more about it and, like, help others if they have any sort of natural ability in that field. He wants to maybe help teach others, like, I don't know, the basics or, like, the do's and don'ts or how not to use it. But at the same time, I do think he kind of wants to bring more of a, yes, this is obviously could be used for some immense bad, but at the same time, there needs to be more recognition and, like, the whole academia field, or, like, that whole, I guess, not society, you know what I mean, community, that, like, maybe we should start teaching people more about, like, if you've got it, use it for good or use it for self-defense, like, things like that, instead of just shutting it down entirely and just reading out of books. Maybe it could do some good to lead with demonstration every now and then. Like, I think he also would be willing to, or trying, kind of wanting to shake up the field a little bit in terms of, we have so many gifted people who just shut these innate abilities down because they're told to, instead of allowing them to use them or allowing this field to progress further because we've decided that it's, like, not okay for them to use it, or we've decided that it's too dangerous without ever giving it a shot.
Yeah, sort of a Professor Xavier kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's, I think that's good. I like that. Rico.
Rico has always been a bit of a dreamer. Never really been one to want to settle down anywhere. So this life gives him the chance to move around as much as he likes. And it's a lot more fun and exciting than running freight. So yeah, I'd say this is pretty much where he wants to be.
I like that. I like that we kind of have two people who sort of are, like, looking to the future and very different futures, and then someone who's just, like, living in the moment.
We've also, like, accidentally managed to line this up perfectly with our alignments, with true neutral being the one just living in the moment.
Yeah. Okay, and last question for you all. No, we're not going to ask that one. I'm just gonna eliminate that one. What's up?
Good. Cool. I didn't like it anyway.
I didn't like it.
I think my answer was best personally, but
okay. So we have a bit of a backstory. We understand why these people are together. We understand a little bit more about their relationships with each other. Which I really like. I really like that. I don't know about you guys, but I enjoyed it. From my perspective at least. So you guys are hanging out at the Mercenaries Guild. Is there someone at the Mercenaries Guild that you all, like, really respect? Someone that you all kind of look up to in some way? Obviously, Vaughn doesn't look up to anyone, but...
Bingo.
Tarkus, Rico, Vaughn, someone want to give me just a name or something if you want to come up with one? I can make one. What'd you say?
Miko.
Rico and Miko.
And Nico and Chico. Fearsome foursome. Gonna rename myself to Chico just to.
Okay. So you guys are hanging out at the Mercenaries Guild. You've been actually here for a while now. It usually doesn't take long for you guys to get jobs. You're good at what you do. The Mercenaries Guild is pretty happy to throw you assignments, ranging anywhere from helping out towns get rid of bad mining companies to helping mining companies get rid of townspeople. anything in between, someone's willing to pay. You guys are generally willing to do it in some way, shape, or form. It's been several hours at this point, and like I said, it doesn't take this long. And then as you guys are standing there, you're sort of talking to each other. There's a bar in the Mercenaries Guild. It's just a bar. That's the Mercenaries Guild. It's a bar. You guys are standing at the bar. You're about ready to head out, maybe get a night on the town or just go get something to eat when Miko approaches you guys. He says, hey, fellas, you got a minute?
Nico, you know, for you, I always have plenty of minutes.
I don't like it when you say that to me, but okay.
I'm feeling a bromance coming on here.
Vaughn does have a pretty high charisma, for the record. Okay. He's very charismatic.
Unsurprised.
Vaughn says that, and he says, all right, this way. And he kind of leads you over to one of the back corners of the bar, to a booth that you guys know it's Miko's booth. This is where he hangs out. So he sits down and he kind of ushers or waves for you guys to sit down with him. I assume you do. If you don't, you can tell me. But as you guys sit down, he says, you guys want any drinks or something?
Yeah, sure.
I'll take the usual.
All right. And he kind of holds a finger out. He gets one of the servers' attention, and he just kind of circles his finger round of drinks. You guys, I mean, you've been there. They know your usual drinks. So, he's all right. how long have we known each other?
Probably been a few years, 5, 10, somewhere in there.
Yeah, you guys, you guys remember when I got you off that collapsing bridge out in the Fargon galaxy?
Nico, I will never forget that day.
Thank you once again. Yeah, and I mean, like, and Rico over here. Come on, how many scraps have I gotten you out of? You know,
bringing this up almost makes me think you're going to ask for a favor.
Here's the deal. And the drinks come around to the table, and you see Miko shift uncomfortably. The thing about the Mercenaries Guild is, while everyone's pretty rough and rowdy, it's not very often that you see anyone vulnerable in the bar. It's a pretty masculine environment. Even the women are very tough and brash, and to see someone who appears to be letting his guard down is kind of a strange thing. So, just a little while ago, I got an off-world message. You guys ever heard of Old Terra? Which is a name that you guys would have no recollection to. And as you guys kind of have your blank looks on his face, he says, all right, well, Ulterra is it's an outer rim planet. It's not a part of the council. No one goes out there, except for, you know, traders stuff. Kind of a wasteland, if I'm being honest. It's what I call home. And, I just got a message, from one of my buddies out there that they're in some trouble. I got this run. I can't go. If I bail on this run, this dude's gonna kill me. And I need this work. I was wondering if I could send you guys out there to kind of help him out. It shouldn't be these guys. Okay, it's little town called Broke Tree. Long ago they were kind of a warriory race, and now they're all pacifist for the most part. When you leave, you're not really welcome back. Number two, I guess, why I can't go. Yeah, they're in some kind of trouble. It's because they're unwilling to fight or some other bullshit. Would you guys mind heading on out there, taking a look, see what they got going on?
Nico, Vaughn puts his hand on Nico's shoulder. This is such a difficult thing you must be going through right now. Thank you so much for sharing this story with us. I can't imagine what it must be like for you.
I mean, it's real dumb. That's what it is. All right, fellas. And he kind of lifts up his drink, takes a swig.
No, it's beyond dumb, Nico. It's tragic. I'm so sorry.
So can I count on you guys?
You have my word.
Yeah, man.
All right. You guys get back here. I mean, round of drinks. We'll go take a peruse and see what kind of, if I can find you any weapons or any kind of upgrades, we'll figure it out when you get back here. But I mean, like, you guys know I'm good for it. I mean, I'll, you know, whatever I can do.
Of course.
He hands you the coordinates to Old Terra. And he's one of the upper levels of the guild. So he has access to the guild starships and can actually rent them out. So he kind of walks away for a little while and before he leaves, like, I'll be right back with a ship for you guys. And he comes back with, it's just kind of a cruiser. It's got minimal weapons capability, but it's fast. So, and he tosses it. Who's the pilot?
Real fast. Is Nico, psionic in any way?
No. This is actually one of the weird things about the Mercenary Guild that you guys are a part of. You guys are the only three psionics that you know of. You suspect there are a couple other people that might be psionic in some way, shape, or form, but it's not really, especially on the planet that you guys are on. It's kind of an old Wild West kind of vibe. So it's not like a huge deal, but generally speaking, people are pretty quick to draw weapons on psionics. So it's not something that you like advertise. Some of the people kind of know. But yeah, it's not a real fun place to show it off.
Do they know that we are psionics?
Most people in the Mercenaries Guild, no. Okay. The people running the show, kind of the default de facto leaders of the guild, they saw that you guys were good at what you do. They honestly don't care if you're psionic or not. They think it's an asset more than anything. Mm-hmm. And once you're in, you're family. So anyone in the guild messes with you guys, or anyone outside the guild messes with you, the entire guild is going to war for you. So, yeah, they're all, you're basically the only psionics that you know of here. But in this bar, they're all okay with it.
I'm interested in maybe doing some telepathic contact with Nico here and reading his mind.
Yeah.
So. For sure. One thing I'm unclear on is if he succeeds on his mental saving throw to resist, do they like know that I tried to do this? So, okay, this is the confusion, I guess. So I'm level 2 in the telepathic contact skill, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's no need for a saving throw for the basic forms, but there is starting in level 2.
Yeah, so basically it depends on how intelligent the person is how I want to play it.
Yeah.
I the rules aren't very explicit about this, but it's not so much that they resist. It's just that they're just intelligent enough that it takes a bit more effort than what you are putting into it. Mm-hmm. To read their mind. There are people who, I mean, like, they are hyper cerebral and they're aware of what's happening, and they've sort of trained to identify when someone is trying to enter their mind telepathically. Mm-hmm. But you doubt that Nico is.
Okay. I guess like a maybe a question that's not relevant right now then, but that may be important later is like, so levels 0 and 1, the target does not have a chance to do a mental saving throw, but mm-hmm. levels 2 and beyond do. So could I theoretically, like if level 2 is reading their thoughts, but level 0 is observing emotional states, could I like just observe the emotional state?
Yeah, absolutely. You can do your level or below. Okay. You just only get whatever that level is that you're doing.
Gotcha. Okay, well, I think I do want to like read his thoughts, so that would be level 2.
Okay. Saving throw. Oh, he did not save. Oh, wait, no. That's not right. That's not how you do a saving throw.
Also, what is he saving against? Like, what's my...
My understanding is that it's against his intelligence saving throw. So there are...
I see.
I thought it was going to be... The way that I was reading into it is that he would do a mental saving throw.
Yeah, so he has to beat his number.
Yeah, and then he tries to roll over his...
I see.
Yeah. In Stars Without Number, there are 3 saving throws that you can roll. And
right.
Yeah. So we're rolling a mental one. He did not roll over his number. So the psychic's awareness of the target's surface cognition is sophisticated enough to read their current thoughts. And though it can't pick up memories or non-obvious connections, the target gets a mental saving throw to resist this. So you read the surface thoughts of Nico. And mm-hmm. essentially, like you keep hearing this. Hold on, I gotta find the name of this thing, and it's gonna. Nope, can't find it. We're going to name it something else because I can't find the name off my sheet right here. You get this this phrase that he's kind of thinking about, and it's essentially the silver death is what he keeps like thinking in his head.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely like a troublesome, like he just keeps saying like, I can't believe the silver death is back.
Mm.
And he's like, and then there's like this sort of secondary thought where it's like, you know, I can't go help though.
Mm-hmm.
Are basically the two big thoughts that are in his head. Like he wants to help be a part of this, whatever this is, it doesn't sound good, but you know, he can't do anything about it.
So as we're like getting ready and stuff there, I think, Vaughn's whole flavor here is that he's charismatic and a good leader, not because he is like a particularly like great orator or like especially strong and inspires like confidence, but because especially aided by this skill, you know, to like know what other people are thinking and feeling, he is like able with great efficacy to cut straight to the core of like the individual's desires and fears, etc. Right. And effectively like manipulate them because he like knows this information that other people shouldn't have. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like, it comes off to an unsuspecting person as incredibly like empathetic. When in reality it's like manipulative. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, as they're like, you know, getting ready, I think Vaughn asks, like, so Nico, tell me what exactly we're dealing with in this. What is the threat to your people?
Look, okay, so there's a story from, I mean, long, long, long time ago. My grandfather's grandfather, effectively. Centuries ago, an old orbital an old planet orbiter, crashed onto old Terra. When it did, it released a bunch of water, rain of monsoons, flooded the whole place, just ruined everything. But it also crashed into this old city called the Old Terran City, because, you know, people are creative like that, I guess.
Naturally.
It breached. There was this big research facility there, and it breached the core in the research facility, and it started leaking this chemical into the water. The story is that it effectively poisoned people. People were dying because they were drinking this water that had these, like, you know, silvery streaks in it from this poison. And the story is that these five scouts went up into the research center, and they found these filters of some kind, filtered out the Silver Death, is what they called it.
The Silver Death.
Yeah, the filters filtered out the Silver Death, and they, you know, it lasted long enough for the leak to stop, or the leak to go. I don't know what, you know, it wasn't an issue anymore. They could just drink the water straight. You know, it used to be this thing. Like, there was apparently, I never saw them, but there was my grandfather used to talk about how you'd go and you could look at the filters and compare it back to the filters. But sometime when my grandfather was a teenager or something like that, the filters broke. And their old effect probably just disintegrated. So, you know, whatever. But I got a message this morning over my comms says the Silver Death is back. Which, I mean, it can't be. It's been at least a couple centuries. No way that this poison is just suddenly back in the water supply, which means that what's happening is someone has to be there killing them, right? Like, that's the only explanation I have.
Now, Nico, this is an important question. You kept saying this is a story. Is this a story or is this history?
I don't know. You know how, you know how these planets are. I mean,
of course,
some of them have these catastrophic events, and it's, you know, it's like all of a sudden, all of a sudden they have their own personal stories about what happened, how they survived, and how they were all great because they survived this way. And it's, you know, it's half of it's bullshit, half of it's could be true. I don't know. There's no proof that it ever happened. And I mean, how could the filter even filter it out? It doesn't make any sense to me. Basically, what I'm saying is, I'm a skeptic.
Of course,
it might have happened. I don't know, but what I do know is that it didn't just come back after all these years.
Now, let me ask one more thing, and forgive me for asking this question if it's a little bit too personal. But you said that once you leave, you can't go back. You seem to know this place more than any of us do. Why not join us?
So, okay. So Old Terra is basically divided into two bigger cities. At least where you're going, there's two bigger cities. They're not even that big, but, you know, for Terra, they're big. So these two bigger cities, there's Broke Tree, where I'm from, and then there's Digger Spring, which is this old mining colony up in the mud flats. During my grandfather's adult life, during my father's youth life, they had this real problem with. They used to call them wasters, but I mean, just people will come to town, raid the town, steal from them, do all this kind of stuff. And, they kind of rose up and, you know, I mean, really knocked some heads, like really did the wasters dirty, if you know what I mean. And, afterwards, there was this apparent regret, which I don't understand, because I mean, they're stealing from you. They're stealing from your livelihood. You're the only Broke Tree is basically the only town on that side of the planet that's growing anything to eat. So, I mean, you're stealing from the only place to get food. Like, you get what's coming to you. That's how I see it. But the five families, which are descendants of the, you know, the five scouts,
that, right,
you know, went and got the filters. That's the way the world works. They came in and they decided that the way forward was peace, pacifism. So they don't raise their hand to no man. As a result of, you know, this new way of life, they also became really insular. They trade with people, they send them on their way. They have a single house where, you know, like, strangers can spend the night if they want, but it's outside of town. And basically strangers have to be out of the town by dark. And if you ever get banished, or, you know, you decide that you're going to leave Broke Tree, you're basically dead to them. They don't want you coming back.
What a narrow-minded way of living.
It really is. Well, it's dumb. It's what it is. Like, it's no way to live. That's why I left.
I don't blame you. Well, in any case, I understand why you can't join us, but if you have other cohorts of yours from Volterra, perhaps they would be of use to us.
Yeah. So when you get there, the person that sent me the message is she's a fellow by the name of Jackie Naguera. I mean, how many mutants you guys run into mutants before, right?
Of course.
Right. You know, yes. You travel, you guys are well traveled. So don't be alarmed by Jackie. She's a mutant. When I left, she was on the hunt. They're the farmers, the gatherers, those types of people, and then there's the hunters who they go out and they find food, they kill the food, they bring it back. So when I went there, Jackie was a part of the hunt, one of the hunt teams. She was the one who reached out to me. She telling me that there's a lot happening. So she said I need to come back, but, you know, I can't go back. She knows that. So that's why I'm sending you.
Well, Nico, know that I would love for you to join us and to find a way for you to join us, because you deserve to see your home again, even if they have banished you.
Trust me, it ain't home no more.
I understand.
All right, well, Vaughn, I don't know how you do it, but you're good at getting people to talk.
I've had long practiced the art, Nico.
Seems like it. I appreciate it. I like you. Tarkus, Rico. I know you guys already follow Vaughn, like the leader he is, but I mean, you know, you pay keep extra close to him, make sure he stays all right.
He flashes a knowing smile to his counterparts.
I just roll my eyes.
You're a wise man, Nico.
Only thing I ask is that you bring back the ship safe. Because, I mean, it's under my name. So those are my credits that you're dealing with right there. If you mess it up in any way. Who's the pilot?
Definitely not Vaughn.
I have a plus one.
Okay, I think it makes sense actually for Rico. I think it's kind of cool if Rico's the pilot because he's the precog.
That actually, does really well.
I think it's kind of cool. Okay, so he's talking to you specifically. It's like you bring back this ship in one piece. Okay.
Well, If it's any different, it'll be improved.
That's fine, too. Then credit my account. All right. As soon as you guys get back, you send me a message. Or, I mean, if you, you know, anything happens, you send me a message and I'll I mean, I'll try to send. See what I can do.
Just airdrop me your contact information.
You definitely already have his contact info in your data paths. There's a directory for the mercenary guild you guys have. All right, and Mika walks away. So I have nothing further planned with this scene. I think that we are almost to a good stopping point. I want to just take it to one little bit further, but
great.
But do you guys want to do anything else in this scene?
I'm good.
I'm good.
I've talked plenty.
All right. Perfect. So you guys make your way over to the ship. Let's see. What is the ship's name? How about that? Real quick. Let's figure out the ship's name. Not looking up a generator. Just off the dome. The ship's name is...
Bartholomew.
Hold on. There we go. Hedda. The ship's name is the Hedda. You have no idea what language that's supposed to be, but it's a, I mean, it's a fine ship. There's nothing too crazy about it. It's a, like I said, it's kind of a smaller ship. It's definitely fast. It doesn't have a lot of firepower going on with it. And I mean, all the standard equipment, you guys can jump through hyperspace and all that fun stuff. There is a single escape pod on this that fits two people. So good luck. And
don't crash.
Don't crash. And there is a smaller pod that, I mean, fits like four people that, I mean, would take you down to the planet if you wanted to, you know, explore that, sort of separates from it. But yeah, so you guys get into the Hedda, familiarize yourself with the controls. And Rico, why don't you give me a pilot skill check?
Don't blow it, Rico.
Crash before you even get off the ground.
That'll be a 10.
All right. So it's kind of a rough start, if we're being honest. But after the rough start, you guys get into space, you punch in the coordinates that Nico gave you guys. And in, I mean, a little while, it's probably a couple hours, you guys jump pretty far and you all of a sudden come out of the hyperspace and find yourselves looking at what is a pretty awful looking planet. The sun on this planet, you can tell, is slightly larger than in other planets that you've visited, which it's a really subtle difference, but you know that the planet that you're heading to is going to be effectively a desert. It's, I mean, sandy orange in color. And as you guys are kind of circling, you see that one half of the planet in particular is, I mean, it's just a wasteland. There's from where you guys are, from the scans that you guys are running, there is effectively nothing there. You're sure there are probably signs of life down there somewhere, but from the looks of it, there's no great civilizations, no great cities or anything. And as you guys get to the last quadrant of your scan, You find two settlements and a very large technological mass somewhere up there. So you've probably found where you're going to go. As you guys descend into the planet's atmosphere, Rigo has a little bit of trouble at first. The upper atmosphere of this planet is relatively thick, actually, and you see a meter spiking on your dashboard of the ship. And as you look down, you realize that you are entering a patch of what is basically just radioactive atmosphere. It's really high up here. It's not It's not as high, or it's not as bad as it could be. It's not like you're standing next to a nuclear reactor, but you know that whatever happened on this planet long ago that left it desolate, the scars still remain. And one of those is the radioactive atmosphere. As you descend further, things start stabilizing. You feel everything getting a little bit more normal, and you see a small town up ahead. It's sandwiched between a couple of trees that don't exactly look like trees. It looks like rocks carved to look like trees. There are no leaves. You don't hear or see any birds. All you see are these four-legged creatures that remind you of horses, carrying carts and moving their way towards the town. You see farmland surrounding the main town. And as you get closer, you see a sign. As you get closer to the landing pad, you land and you look out of the main Windows viewer of your starship, and you see a sign that you would recognize anywhere that says Psionics Outlawed. And that's where we're going to end tonight.
Bum, bum, bum.
I'm going to destroy the sign with telekinesis. No. I'm going to throw it at someone.
Awesome. Oh, I guess I should outro. I forgot what we were doing, guys.
And that's you, my friend.
Thank you guys for listening to Dungeon Arcade. My name is Adam. I've been your Galaxy Master. We are playing Stars Without Number by Kevin Crawford. We're also playing Grandfather's Reign Adventure, which is part of the Dust system, but it's compatible with Stars Without Number. We are playing with Stars Without Number, obviously. Thank you guys for listening. We're excited for the next couple episodes of this, like I said, and we will let you go. Michael, Rico, you want to give us your little outro?
I'm Rico.
That's Rico. You should have seen that coming. Tarkus.
I'm Tarkus. I didn't do much in this one. I don't know.
You didn't know much. I promise you'll have more to do later. And Alex.
And I'm Vaughn, and I'm just carrying a lot of weight right now.
Yeah. Wow, narrative weight, really. Perfect, guys. Hey, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. We'll talk to you next time. We won't see you. That'd be weird. We'll talk to you.